Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views and the views of our guests. And, well, today our special guest is Dr. Dennis Cuddy. And we're going to be talking, well, we're going to be talking about his book, The Road to Socialism. But before we do that, he wants to touch on some other things. So you get started there, Dennis.
Okay, thank you. Just for a little bit, I wanted to, since I haven't talked to this particular audience for a while, to give an update on the Bible Literacy Project. They're in the news again because their new textbook, their new edition anyway, is coming out this coming month, January. And what happened was Dr. Wiley Drake, who's the second vice president of the Southern Baptist Convention, had a news item pointing out an additional error in their textbook called The Bible and Its Influence. For example, on page 238, they say Jesus was born in Nazareth, when, of course, he was born in Bethlehem. Elsewhere in the book, they mentioned that, but in this case, they, for some reason, said Nazareth. And Wiley, Dr. Drake, also pointed out the role of Charles, Dr. Charles Haynes, which apparently the Bible Literacy Project is trying to distance itself from him. So a couple of the points I want to raise is, once again, this group, the Bible Literacy Project, is trying to get into every state it can. It's already piloted in California, Oregon, and the state of Washington. And they say now they're in 29 states and about 85 districts. So wherever you are listening to this, they're probably trying to come there to a school district where you are. And it would really behoove you to check with a friendly school board member, maybe a textbook selection committee, or somebody on the school board who could tell you whether they've approached your local district. Because while there have been some Bible curricula which are fine, this one has a number of very, very serious problems. And the couple of the things I want to mention is, on their website, in the past, they've said this book does not contain errors. Well, here they have just acknowledged that they do have this error, and it's going to be corrected in the edition that comes out next month. So you know, I wonder, if, especially for those California and other school districts who have bought this book already, if they're going to get a free copy of this new one, since the old one contains errors which they were told were not there. In terms of Dr. Charles Haynes, I'll just briefly mention he's with something called the First Amendment Center, and Dr. Drake had pointed out a number of really rather curious things about Dr. Haynes, such as he has been on the board of the Pluralism Project out of Harvard, which also has a Wiccan high priestess on its board, and a number of things he's pointed out. And after that, the Bible Literacy Project tried to make a big deal by saying he's not an official spokesperson, staff member, director, or advisory board member. But then if you go to the website, there's 32 references to him. You have, for example, an article by the AP talking about a Gallup poll that, which says, quote, speaking for the project, the Bible Literacy Project, Charles Haynes says such and such. So that's what I wanted to point out. They're trying to distance themselves from him, but I don't think they can. So just be careful and watch out for this Bible Literacy Project and this textbook, The Bible and Its Influence, coming to your district.
And this, of course, is the Bible as Literature Project. You know, everybody thinks it's wonderful. Now we're going to teach the Bible in school. And unfortunately, why, this is not what it's about. Well, we're going to be back here in just a moment with Dr. Dennis Cuddy, and then we'll be talking more about his book, The Road to Socialism, which, of course, this has been updated, come back with an index. It is available at the present time, and we're hoping that many of you out there will want to get a copy. It should be, give you tremendous insight into what this moved, what is socialism, how it's going to impact on you. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay on the last time I'm going to be with you this year. And, of course, next time we're with you, I will be the year 2007, which is going to be a very fateful year. Now, our guest today is my good friend, Dr. Dennis Cuddy, who, of course, taught at the university level, who certainly worked in the Reagan administration and the Department of Education, who has testified before Congress, who's a prolific writer, and we carry a number of his books, and we'll be talking later in this program about one of his older books, which has now been republished, updated, and of course had an index added, The Road to Socialism. Southwest Radio Church is republishing it, but we're going to be carrying it because we think it's so important you understand what socialism is. We've adopted it here. But Dr. Cuddy was simply talking about a project. Now, it's part of the Bible as Literacy Project, but what is the book that they are trying to get into our schools across America?
The title of it is The Bible and Its Influences, the title of the textbook that they're pushing in all the school districts, mainly public, but also Christian schools. They can all over the nation.
And, of course, this is the idea. Isn't it wonderful we're going to teach the Bible in our schools? But are they really going to be teaching the Bible in schools?
Well, worse than that, what they do teach contains errors. They will have, for example, that Jesus taught in parables so everybody could understand what he said immediately, which is the opposite of what the Bible actually says. In Matthew and Luke, it says that, speaking to most people, Jesus used parables that, quote, seeing they may not see and hearing they may not understand. So there's a number of errors, and then there's a number of misleading statements they had in the previous edition, the Mayflower Compact, but they, without ellipses, those little dots saying something's left out, they left out of the Mayflower Compact that it said for the glory of God and for the advancement of the Christian civilization. And so it's not just errors and misleading things. They literally undermine, in a number of cases, traditional biblical teaching. So it's something your listeners should really guard against if they're trying to come to a school district where you are.
All right, fine. So I hope that our listeners out there will understand. It's sort of like be careful of a Greek bearing gifts. Well, be careful of the people who profess to be Christians who just want to bring the Bible into our schools, but really there is so much effort to undermine the teachings of the Scriptures because, ladies and gentlemen, there is a conspiracy against God. That's why they took God and prayer and the Ten Commandments out of our schools. That's why they don't want nativity scenes. That's why they don't want Christ. Crosses has nothing to do with the wall of separation. There is an intense hatred of God and of Christianity, and they intend to destroy it. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and of course Dr. Cuddy is with us. All of our stations are on board. And is there anything else you wanted to say about this Bible as Literacy program before we get to the road to socialism?
One last thing, because it relates in a way to the Road to Socialism book. About half of the board members, the original board members of the Bible Literacy Project, are what's called communitarians, which is very much related to socialism. There's a big push for this communitarianism, which means while you may have individual rights, they say that should be balanced against the larger interests of the society as a whole, and that's what socialism emphasizes. Rather than the individual rights, responsibilities, it emphasizes the group, and that's where you see in education, you see outcome-based education, and things are tailored towards the group. There's group learning and so on. And so to the extent that this is largely pushed by communitarians and they want common ground, what we all have in common, that would fit with one of the people I quote in my Road to Socialism, John Dewey, who wrote a book called A Common Faith, where he said religions which have dogmatic beliefs, moral absolutes, they will have to, he said, surrender, because what we're about is developing this common faith, what all faiths of the world have in common. And he was, of course, prominent in the Intercollegiate Socialist Society, which was a branch of the Fabian Socialists in England, and that's the way I begin my book. Actually, on the copyright page, I put a picture that Dr. Stan knows very well. This is a 1910 rendition of by the Fabian Socialists, this famous window ordered by George Bernard Shaw, saying, "Remold it nearer to the heart's desire," was the Fabian Socialist window, and there A couple of the founders are hammering the world on an anvil. They're trying to remold it nearer to their socialist desire. They were founded the year after Karl Marx, and instead of pursuing sort of the violent revolution that Marx had tried to initiate globally, spontaneously in a number of places, they believed in a more gradual approach. They would slowly take over things. And the reason I'm coming up with this new edition, this new updated edition with an index, is, as I've said many times in other books and on Radio Liberty, that the ultimate goal, in my opinion, is that they want a synthesis of Eastern communism and Western capitalism into this world socialist government. And they pursue this through a dialectical process that Marx and Hegel and some others had developed earlier. Ever more gradually but inexorably moving us toward this world socialist government. And so that's why I decided to do this particular book at this time.
Well, I think it's so important that people understand that socialism and our form of government, a constitutional republic, are incompatible. In socialism, the government provides for you from the cradle to the grave, provides everything you need, but of course must then be able to control everything you have. Under our form of government, or at least as it was created by our founding fathers, why, the federal government had nothing to do with the individual, because our founding fathers were wise enough to know that men, at least some men, are inherently evil, and they want to control everything, and they are totally ruthless in their effort to get it. So you've got to take the chains off the people, put the chains on the government, and the federal government was to have nothing to do with the individual. They were not to be able to tax the individual. The income tax was outlawed. They had to lie to get that in, promising it would only for the very wealthy and never go beyond 3%. Only for the very wealthy. When did you last hear that? It was the very wealthy who were pushing the income tax, but not for themselves, just for us common folks. But the whole idea was now the government was going to provide for the people, because we're a loving, benevolent government. Oh, we care so much about people. You know, that's why the federal government is going to be able to have a number for everybody, a Social Security number, because it'll never be used for anything, but of course we can give you money. And if you believe that, why, of course, you've got to be terribly naive. They want everybody numbered so they can control everybody, and what our founding fathers feared is coming to fruition. So let's talk about socialism, because this is the mechanism by which they have purchased the support of foolish people who think that they can trust government to provide for them.
Sure, and for your listeners who say, well, we may eventually be drawn into a world government, but why do you think it's socialist? This is just your theory, Dr. Cuddy, that it'll be this synthesis of Eastern communism and Western capitalism. Well, no, it's not. I mean, it is a theory I have, but I think if you just simply say, if you're going to have a world government, what does it have to be? When you have most of the leaders of the world and all of the leaders of Europe who are vice presidents of Socialist International, it's really not too difficult to imagine that if there is a world government, it would be socialist, because relatively few nations have a capitalist free enterprise system as we are supposed to have, although we're being pushed in that synthesis ever closer to socialism. In terms of the income tax, that was ultimately to undercut the middle class. As you said, the rich have their offshore accounts and tax shelters and so forth. They never really pay. I mean, they do pay something, but it's really hurts the middle class. And that was deliberate as well, because what their attitude is that we will, you used the word, Dr. Stan, benevolent. There's a book by one of these people, actually, he's the editor of the American Fabian, the American branch of the British Fabian Society. It was, the magazine was called the American Fabian. And what it emphasizes is that we will have this type of feudalism, like the old Middle Ages feudal days. In fact, the title by this fellow, W.J. Gent, and I put one of his letters in here, to H.G. Wells. He's writing to Wells. I put the actual letter in this book, The Road to Socialism. And the title of his book is Our Benevolent Feudalism. And he maps out what the future will be in 100 years or so, this sort of American socialism that will be brought about. He's not the only one. I also put a quote from The Lord of the World, written in 1907, by Robert Hugh Benson, talking about the same thing, this American socialism that would come about through the Western scheme of free trade, as they said. And as you mentioned, there are some really, really powerful people pushing that, and that's why on page four of this book, I excerpt four quotes that I thought would grab the reader's attention. First of all, you have the H.G. Wells quote from his 1939 book called The New World Order, where he acknowledges that what they're about is to evoke a westernized world socialism, to have this new world order, which he says countless people will hate it and they'll die protesting against it. Also, I put a quote by Norman Thomas, who ran for the Socialist Party presidential candidate six times, I think from about 1928 through 1948. And he said that the American people will never knowingly adopt socialism, but you know, if you call it liberalism, they'll go for it hook, line, and sinker. Then I put another quote by Earl Browder, who was head of the Communist Party of the USA, saying that he was really surprised. He says America's getting more socialism on the installment plan than he had realized, than in the Soviet Union even. And then the final quote is one that I've used before, from David Rockefeller's recent book called Memoirs in 2002, where he is finally acknowledging what Rush Limbaugh and some others said was just, if you thought that, you'd be a kook, and that's that the Council on Foreign Relations and Rockefeller were plotting for this world government. And the quote, of course, is on page 405 of his book Memoirs, where he says, some even believe we, the Rockefeller family, are part of a secret cabal working against the best interests of the United States, characterizing my family and me as internationalists and of conspiring with others around the world to build a more integrated global political and economic structure, one world, if you will. And then the very next sentence, Rockefeller says, quote, if that's the charge, I stand guilty and I am proud of it, end quote.
And, of course, what he's basically is an internationalist. He has no loyalty to America. His effort as one of the most wealthy men in America, and if you really believe Bill Gates and certainly Warren Buffett are the two richest men in America, you've been listening to Rush Limbaugh too long. I mean, the truth of the matter is the Rockefeller family has run this country, you know, for almost a century, and through they control the Citibank and Chase Manhattan Bank, and our great oil, Exxon and Chevron, are both Rockefeller. But nobody ever talks about it anymore. The reason is because it's not allowed to be discussed in our universities. I have there's a professor at our local university who wrote a book 25, 30 years ago called Who Runs America? Excellent book, going into the background of these things. He is now chairman of the department up at the university. He will not even discuss these things. He's simply been bought off. This is what they do. They either buy you off or they destroy you. So, of course, he's smart enough to be bought off. But there are really people who have no principles at all. They go along with this because this is how you get along in the world. And there is an elite who wants to control everybody, and they use the mechanism of socialism. They've been working on it for well over a century, and they know exactly what they're doing. The average individual thinks that socialism is a division of the wealth. No, it is the centralization of wealth in the hands of the elite. Because somebody's got to be in control, and it's got to be them. They're the ones who are going to buy the politicians, and that's why in Washington, D.C. today, we have some of the finest politicians that money could buy. Go ahead, Dr. Cuddy.
Well, yes, that's exactly right. And I remember you told me a quote by Congressman Dannemeyer that he was listening to David Rockefeller one time, who said that few men are born to rule, but most men are born to be ruled.
Right.
And so that's the typical elitist attitude. And one of the things I put in my book is a cartoon by Robert Minor in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch back in 1911. And it's on Wall Street, and there's Karl Marx, and under his arm is a book. And it's not called Communism, it's called Socialism. And shaking his hand and smiling at him is Rockefeller, John D. Rockefeller, Andrew Carnegie, J.P. Morgan, and a number of others. And they're saying delighted, and that's because, as you said, it's a concentration of wealth. There's a difference between those people, the monopoly capitalist, and the free enterprise capitalist that most of us are or support. The monopoly capitalists love socialism because they can buy politicians who then in turn will enact rules and regulations and laws to
hold that right there. Dennis, go right ahead, pick up where I so rudely interrupted you. You were saying that they just love all these laws because that allows them to buy the politicians who make the laws that benefit them and enslave the rest of us.
Right. The laws, rules, and regulations will stymie any competition which may try to come up against the power elite, as I call them. And so I try to put, like I said, some letters in here, one by W.J. Ginn. I mentioned another item I put in here is where H.G. Wells, who's promoting this New World Order way in advance, mapping out the plan and the socialism that would be to come. And he's writing, and there's a couple of these. I only put one of them in here. I have a couple of letters where he's writing to FDR and saying, I'm coming over. I want to interview you and Mrs. Roosevelt and, you know, some chit-chat. And then toward the end of each letter, he says, and if you want to get in touch with me, just write to me in care of Chase National Bank. I mean, it doesn't say a room number, you know, or some secretary's name where he's, you know, left a forwarding address or something. He just says Chase National Bank, which is the Rockefeller Bank. So it's fairly clear that these elitists are all in cahoots, as it were, with each other. And so in the introduction to my book, I begin by saying that there's a group. I've mentioned the Fabian Socialists. I also mentioned Skull and Bones and some key people there, Morris Hadley, writing about Theodore Roosevelt and exposing basically Theodore, what he was up to. One of the things that Roosevelt said is if people knew what he and the president of Yale, whose name was Hadley, were up to, they'd kick them out on the street. His fellow anarchist, he called him. So, and then I put some other statements. But then I say Cecil Rhodes, who I've mentioned before to your listeners, had this secret society, the Society of the Elect, and used Rhodes Scholars. So you have really a confluence of agendas here. You have Skull and Bones, Fabian Socialists, and Cecil Rhodes' plan to use Rhodes Scholars. And I mentioned in this introduction the importance of some of these people. And over a period of time, for example, one of the Association of Helpers members of Rhodes' group was a P.E. Corbett. And what he wrote about over 60 years ago in a book called Postwar Worlds was the main strategy, that they would get to this world government by linking up regional economic arrangements. And he puts in here in his book, a world association binding together and coordinating regional groupings of states may evolve toward one universal federal government. And he says it will be gradual. He says there will be an economic and financial organization embracing trade, development, migration. Remember these words now, migration, a central bank, and so on. And you see this going on now with this North American community that's coming about, exactly what P.E. Corbett said. And then I mentioned sort of their model. They always have a model. And so Hong Kong in 1997 became the model because it was formerly capitalist, but with the Chinese communist takeover, then you have your synthesis. Hong Kong is now pretty much socialist, as it were. And so I talk about this plan coming on up through the years in the 1970s. The Rhodes Scholar, Richard Gardner, most people are familiar, most of your listeners are familiar with his Hard Road to World Order, where he's talking about eroding national sovereignty piece by piece. However, he goes on to say how GATT would be part of that, and he goes on to explain that. So there's this economic strategy that they're enlisting to get these regional economic groupings, and then they'll say this all has to be managed by this world government.
Hold up. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and First Dennis is simply referring to the fact that what you're seeing today is long-range planning, and they basically want to use this whole idea of free trade and the General Agreement on Trade and Tariff, World Trade Organization, to justify this fascist control of our lives, and of course in the process to destroy the middle class here in America. But what they can, once they have these various agreements in place, they can do an end run around the Constitution, and they can begin bringing in international law that will circumvent the American Constitution and bit by bit gradually erode our freedom. And it'll be done so slowly the average American won't understand that the elite now have defeated the Constitution and they're taking the chains off of the government and forging them for the people. People can't imagine a dictatorship in America. believe me, ladies and gentlemen, the military dictatorship is planned. If you don't believe that, you need to read the John Warner Defense Appropriations Act. If that you don't even know about that, or the Military Commission Act, understand they know exactly what they're doing, step by step, little by little, here, a little here, there, a little there, until there is no freedom at all. And, of course, the American people will say, isn't it wonderful why these people are looking after us and providing for us? You pick up the story there, Dennis.
Sure. That's what that benevolent feudalism I mentioned that came out over 100 years ago was all about, as you just said, Dr. Stan, the destruction of the middle class. If you remember the old feudal days, you had this elite at the top, the king, the queen, the princes, the dukes, the earls, and so forth, the barons. But you didn't have a middle class. That didn't come about until after the feudal era. You had the other grouping there would be your peasants, your serfs, your oafs, your knaves, and so on at the bottom. And so that's what they're trying to recreate today in a sort of, I call it techno-feudal. It'll be sort of a technical or technocratic feudalism rather than you're out there, you know, planting potatoes and that's all you do sort of thing. Actually, though, I find it sort of humorous that the peasants back then only had to give about 30% of their produce, you know, if they were farmers and growing potatoes to the nobility, whereas today we're paying upwards of about, you know, 40-45% in our taxes. So in some ways, the old feudal serfdom was a little bit better than we've got it. And this is what they want to do. They want to make us outside of the elite today, the power elite, as I call them, and the sort of technocratic elite. They want to have a bunch of worker bees, and that's what they're doing in terms of your education. You've got school to work, as they call it. They want you to develop these skills, and that's been going on a long time. I put a quote from Frederick Gates is his name. He was actually a Baptist minister who Rockefeller came up with to head his general education board, and he wrote an article, Gates did, where he talked about these rural folk, you know, our desire is that they will allow us to shape them in our molding hands. You know, he's talking, you know, very benevolently. We have to take care of these poor dummies who are under our thumb. And so that's the attitude that the elite has. And so continuing this introduction, I mentioned other Rhodes scholars, Strobe Talbot, talking about we need to have a world government, and Bill Clinton, I put a quote from him in his letter to the World Federalist Association after they gave Strobe an award for his article saying that. But I conclude the introduction mentioning Alice Bailey, whom I mentioned to your listeners in the past, and your listeners may say, well, you know, what's she got to do with any of this? And the point is, as Dr. Stan has told your listeners many times, there's a spiritual or religious element to all of this. It's not just economic and political. They can't leave anything uncontrolled. And so they want to have spiritual, as Barry Goldwater called it, ecclesiastical control. And so I put down a quote from Alice Bailey's, whose books were first published by Lucifer Publishing, where she is emphasizing, and once again, this is about 60 or so years ago, she talks in this book about the Aryan race and a point of light, a new vision, the Lord of the world, new world religion, coming new age.
No, but no, then, New World Order was one of her terms, and it's so interesting that George Herbert Walker Bush used both the New World Age and, pardon me, the New World Order and the thousand points of light. They were both terms he got from Alice Bailey.
Alice is the only one I've been able to find. Actually, I've, you know, looked 100, 200 or so years back, and I can't find anybody else who uses the terms New World Order and points of light connected to service. And she did that, and George H.W. Bush did that. And then she talks in this book that I'm quoting from about the synthesis. And we'll pick up after the break.
Well, I think it's important for our listeners to know that Alice Bailey was possessed. She was demonically possessed. Her books were channeled to her by a demonic spirit named Joa Cool. And if you want more information on that, we carry a book called The ABCs of Globalism. Go into who Joa Cool was. Truly a demonic spirit, energizing the woman who inspired an American president. Well, this is Dr. Stan Dennis. Go right ahead with the pickup from there.
Okay. Yes, she often referred to Joao Kull as the master DK, and she had another one too, Kutumi. She used to refer to these spirit guides who channeled stuff through her, supposedly. Well, I mean, yeah, there are demons, and they probably did. But anyway, to some extent, I think Foster Bailey was doing his number there. He was in this. I don't want to spend too much time with that, only to say at the end of the introduction, I put down a quote from her book where she's talking about we're going to have this. And this is over 60 years ago, and she's a real occultist. She's talking about we're going to have this synthesis of global planning and brotherhood and economic fusion and the free flow of commodities everywhere and interdependence and the fellowship of faith. And she says it is this energy which will bring in the new world order for which all men wait, and so on. So you see all the key terms with Alice Bailey as well. So she's a big player in this because there has to be this religious element to this. And so that's mainly the introduction. And once I get into the main body of the book, I give a little background about where this concept of world government came from originally, Dante and his De Monarchia, and I go through various people over the centuries, and then say the movement towards socialism, a world socialist government, came about in earnest a couple of hundred years ago with the Comte de Saint-Simon. He was coming out of the French Revolution, and he wanted a certain type of feudalism to be instituted, ruled by this self-appointed elite. And I put down Pierre Leroux actually coined the word socialism. And I mentioned that Saint-Simon's secretary was Auguste Comte, who developed this religion of humanity, as he called it. So it's what humanism basically came from. And indicate how this concept from Saint-Simon was taught to Karl Marx by Marx's grandfather, Ludwig von his son-in-law, Ludwig von Westphalen's son-in-law was Karl Marx. And who had also studied under Proudhon and Fourier and some others, emphasizing this process, and I mentioned this dialectical process of thesis, antithesis, and synthesis, is how they would move this whole thing forward. And after the French Revolution, you had the Parisian Outlaws League that had come out of that, and the Illuminati when they dispersed into the what was called later the League of the Just, and they paid Marx to write his manifesto and so on. And I lead on up to the successor of Marx, who was his friend, Friedrich Engels, showing in the late 1800s how this was to play out.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Dennis Cuddy, and it's simply tracing the background of socialism from the League of the Just, which was an outgrowth of the Illuminati, and they actually paid Karl Marx to write the Communist Manifesto. And if you doubt that, you get your 1911 British Encyclopedia Britannica, and it tells that story, and we'll send you the pages from it. We have a set of those. But you see, they never teach us in school. You're supposed to think that Karl Marx sat down, scratched his head, and said, I believe, of course, in dialectical materialism and of course, in socialism. And I believe there's a conflict between capitalism and communism. And, you know, working men of the world unite, throw off your chains. You have nothing to lose but your chains. You have a world to gain. He was paid to do this by a secret society. And the world has been dominated by secret societies. And the fact you are never taught this simply reflects the degree of control that exists over what the American people think. Dr. Cuddy, please continue there.
He had, after his manifesto in 1848, they had all these so-called spontaneous revolutions throughout Europe, Italy, and other countries. But they really planned all this stuff, and they developed strategies. And so Engels, in the late 1800s, wrote The Origin of the Family, and he said the first condition for the liberation of the wife is to bring the whole female sex back into public industry. And this, in turn, demands the abolition of the monogamous family as an economic unit of society. So what they were doing was an economic strategy to remove the wife from the home, and that would enable them not only to have more workers of the world, but also to say, okay, now the state must get in the business of child rearing, and thereby, you know, they could shape their values, these youngsters. And so he said education would become a public affair, and society needs to look after all children alike and so on. So this was part of, it was a comprehensive strategy. It wasn't just, you know, some sort of capitalist investment initiative that they had going on. And as I indicated, the American branch of this originally was called the Intercollegiate Socialist Society, and John Dewey was heavily into it. And the father of American sociology wrote a book called Social Control, saying that we, he just admitted, you know, he says, quote, "We're managed by a rather small knot of persons, the elite. Judgment may be molded as well as the will and the feelings." And that's important. You know, it's not just your judgment, not just your action, but he was, they had a plan to mold your feelings and your will, to actually control your will. And it was in this same year that the American Socialist Society was formed. And, of course, the elite, J.P. Morgan, I show how he had a plan to take over the newspapers. Originally, he was going to take over a couple of hundred or so, but then they figured out if they could buy 25 leading newspapers, then the information flow to the others would come from this. So I put an extensive quote about how that happened. And then I put another quote regarding John D. Rockefeller from one of the Muckrakers magazine, Everybody's Magazine, 1904. And that's important because it shows the pervasiveness. It says that Rockefeller, Standard Oil agent, is in, quote, every hamlet in the country. And so, you know, they haven't gotten more stupid or less efficient. So if over 100 years ago they have agents in every hamlet in the country, you know that today they're even more expert at what they're doing. And so I proceed along those lines, and I come up through Woodrow Wilson and mention, as Dr. Stan has in the past, how his chief advisor was a Colonel House, and House wrote a book called Philip Drew, which was about socialism as dreamed of by Karl Marx. And I put another quote where Wilson is saying, House and my, the president's thoughts are one. You know, we think just alike. And I go on and talk about how we're going to have this merger, which fits just fine with Lenin. Lenin in 1916, while Wilson was president, said the aim of socialism is to bring nations closer together and to merge them. He called it disunion for the purpose of union, is what he was about. And I go on and say a little later how FDR, Franklin Roosevelt, would write a letter to House in 1933, indicating who really controlled the country. He said the real truth of the matter is, as you and I know, that a financial element in the larger centers has owned our government ever since the days of Andrew Jackson. And I point out how his FDR's vice president in the 40s, Henry Wallace, referred to the dying giant of capitalism. He was pushing socialism. I've already mentioned H.G. Wells and how he was promoting this synthesis, a liberal socialism, as he called it. And I go in and give various other quotes. We've mentioned before Edward Bernays and his book Propaganda. And Dewey not just talked about a common faith, but he said in his book Individualism, Old and New, and I put an extensive quote from there, he begins this by saying, "We are in for some kind of socialism. Call it by whatever name we please, and no matter what it will be called when it is realized." And he goes on and explains that. And he's the father of progressive education, which dominates the nation today. And I put other quotes besides from the New World Order by H.G. Wells, where he's talking about they were going to ultimately supply teaching and coercive, directive public services to the world. And so it was a global plan. It wasn't just going to involve the U.S. And I also, in case you think, you know, this is somebody on the outside saying some sort of conspiratorial stuff, you got to remember that this was realized at the time. You had a person who ran for a president in 1928 called Al Smith. And he supported, in 1932, FDR for president. But after 4 years, in 36, Smith delivered a speech, and I put the speech in here, January 25 of 36. And I'm not going to read a lot, but I'll just read a couple of sentences, because this is important. This is a fellow at the time, a presidential candidate himself, supporter of FDR, but after 4 years, he says this, quote, just get the platform of the Democratic Party and get the platform of the Socialist Party and lay them down on your dining room table side by side and get a heavy lead pencil and scratch out the word Democrat and scratch out the word Socialist and let the two platforms lay there. Then study the record of the present administration up to date. After you have done that, make your mind up to pick up the platform that more nearly squares with the record, and you will put your hand on the socialist platform, end quote. So this is something where people at the time, leading individuals, saw even then the direction in which FDR was pushing the country. And I go on and mention the London School of Economics and its role and the people that it trained. It was founded by the Fabian socialists, a lot of prominent Americans. The Kennedys went there. Eric Severide went there. A number of prominent Americans.
David Rockefeller went there, didn't he?
Pardon?
Didn't David Rockefeller go there?
Yes. David Rockefeller went there as well. Many of these individuals were doing this. The communists at the time, we keep calling them communists, and you know, they are, but even William Z. Foster, who was head of the Communist Party then, was describing what he called toward a Soviet America. And what he said was they would do it to some extent through education. He said what they would do is have this national Department of Education. See, it's supposed to be locally controlled, but he said, no, we'll have this national Department of Education. And he said students would be taught on the basis of Marxian dialectical materialism. They'll be taught internationalism and the general ethics of the new socialist society is the way he put it. And John Dewey co-authored the First Humanist Manifesto, and that called for a socialized and cooperative economic order. If you look at the social studies as they were taught in school, you had this commission funded by Carnegie back in the 30s, and they had this report about social studies. And so somebody went over from the New Republic magazine and had an interview with Harold Lasky, a leading British Fabian socialist. And he said, quote, at bottom and stripped of its carefully neutral phrases, the report is an educational program for a socialist America. And you can check these quotes out. I try to, you know, give the sources so you don't just have to take my word for it. Religion also was used. You had the Federal Council of Churches pushing at this time, the late 30s, early 40s, a world government, a new order of economic life. You had young scholars like Arthur Schlesinger at the time. He'd be a Kennedy administration advisor. He was at Harvard, writing pretty much when he was younger openly in the Partisan Review about what he wanted. And there he said, quote, there seems no inherent obstacle to the gradual advance of socialism in the United States through a series of new deals. That's FDR's phrase. The transition must be piecemeal, he said. Remember, it's a sort of gradual approach. I put other quotes by leading socialist Bertrand Russell about how they would have used mass psychology and a good society, he says, by which I believe that democratic socialism would be guided, competition will be effectively regulated by law, and so on. And he said this is the way that you would ultimately have your world government.
I think it's so important that people understand that this is what the elitist wanted. Why? Because this is how they were going to gain control of power. Under the original Constitution of America, there wasn't any power that they could have. The power of the federal government was markedly limited. And even if you were a dictator, wanted to be a dictator, you could not control the individual because of the Constitution limited you from having anything to do with any individual or any company or anything at all. You could only deal with matters between states. So they had to get us to the point where now everybody in America is under the control of the federal government. That's what socialism is really about. So an elite can control the common man, and the average individual has no idea what's happened, Dennis.
No, they don't. And as you said, it's really the group versus the individual, and that's why Dewey in his book Democracy in Education said way back 1916 that if you're an individualist, he said, you have a form of insanity, is the word he used, because this new collective state is what we were going to have. In fact, that's in the New World Order, the title of H.G. Wells' 1939 book. He literally says that. He says a collectivist one-world state comprised of these socialist democracies is what we want. And he says it is the system of nationalist individualism that has to go. We are living in the end of the sovereign states. It is the great struggle to evoke a westernized world socialism, and so on. So it is a battle of the socialist state versus the individuals. Now, in case your listeners are saying, well, okay, so this is, you know, one guy, okay, he's an author and he knows FDR, but certainly that doesn't represent the attitude of our government, does it? Well, once again, I try to answer the listeners' questions, and so on page 48, for example, I put this, so you get a flavor of what's going on here. I put, members of Congress are concerned about the promotion of world citizenship at this time, world government. So they held these hearings. And the hearings are held in June of 52. And there's this Major General Sumter Lowry. Now, he's retired, and he's testifying. And he's testifying that the State Department publication number 4289 is called The United Nations and You. Now, remember, he's testifying, and this is from our State Department, publication 4289, quote, makes the flat statement that our survival as men and women is dependent on the UN, which statement is not proper or true, Lowry says. Small groups which take the lead from the State Department are largely responsible for teaching the idea of world citizenship and the world socialist state government in the schools. And he goes on, if you want to read his testimony, you have the publication number, and you can, you can check out what they're doing for yourself. And so what I do is I try and bring this on up and give key quotes by key individuals who are very prominent in life in America. And I try and shed some light on some supposed conservatives like Nixon. And so I'll put a quote where he's being interviewed by a Rhodes Scholar, Howard K. Smith, very prominent news person, Howard K. Smith, in 71. And in this interview, Nixon revealed to Smith, Smith was sort of shocked by this, Nixon says that he is now a Keynesian in economics. And if you have any knowledge of economic history, you know that John Maynard Keynes was sort of the father of 20th century Fabian socialist economics.
But, of course, Nixon had told the American people the truth why they never would have voted for him, because most Americans don't want the government controlling and regulating them. So Nixon lied. He lied about everything. But he certainly lied about the fact that he was a socialist, and yet he introduced far more socialism than most Democrats could, because the people would have howled when the Democrats put it in. But when the Republicans brought in socialism and fascism, why, everybody cheered, because after all, they're in favor of preserving America, and they're anti-communist.
That's what it's supposed to be, but then he trots himself through ping-pong diplomacy over to communist China, which, again, like you said, it would never have happened if, say, a liberal Democrat had proposed, let's have normalization of relations with communist China, but in comes Nixon, and, he's all for that. He was for the Atlantic Agreement as well, which would have merged the European continent with us as well, just like George H.W. But in fact, I think, my memory serves me, I think it was House Resolution 460 or something like that in 1969, I'm trying to remember that George H.W. Bush, who was a congressman, introduced to merge, sort of have a federalization of the United States and the nations of Europe. And so here's this other so-called conservative, George H.W. Bush, who's into the same sort of thing. But the point is, the groundwork for all of this attitude had been prepared many, many years ago. And I put example by this Arthur Calhoun. He wrote this textbook called The Social History of American Family. Was used all over the nation in social service courses in colleges. And these guys, if you look at what they're doing, I mean, they're very blatant. He says in this, the modern individual is a world citizen. He said the family weakens and the society has to assume a larger role. And he goes on and says it seems clear that at least in its early stages, socialism will mean an increased amount of social control We may expect in the socialist commonwealth a system of public educational agencies that will begin with a nursery and follow the individual through life, end quote. Now, where have you heard that recently?
Yeah, well, of course, now they don't want to get them in the kindergarten. They want to get them in, you know, a success by six. They want to get them 2 or 3 years of age. They want to get them as early as they can because
right.
they want to control their minds. And if you really think they're concerned about our children with this idea of preschool, you have to understand it's all about control. And you see these ads over and over and over on television, success by six. They want to get the mind and heart and soul of your children to begin destroying their faith in God and family and country. Our guest is Dr. Dennis Cuddy. His book, The Road to Socialism. And of course, you can read Dr. Cuddy's articles at newsreviews.com. We carry several of his books. We'll tell you about that when we get back after the break. But let me suggest Road to Socialism. Easy to read, very straightforward. You need to understand where we're headed. But even more than that, you need to understand that socialism isn't the redistribution just of their wealth, but yours. Well, Dennis, go right ahead.
Okay. What you were saying just before the break was exactly what Calhoun was lecturing and proposing to the students, the college students of the day, because when he said it will begin with a nursery and go follow the individual through life, that's what lifelong learning is today. They're pushing downward towards the nursery. The education of young children. That's why it was necessary that Friedrich Engels said we have to get the wife out of the home into the workforce, because then the state can take over the shaping of the values of these little ones, and then through school to work, we would follow them through life. You'll be able to have a computer program, you know, on their skills, and they have to keep checking in and get re-educated and so on. And I put the number, I won't quote all of them, I put a number of things to that extent. You have in the 70s, of course, feminism, radical feminism is coming about, and I put quotes from there, what's called the Document Declaration of Feminism, where they say it is necessary to establish the socialist order. I put quotes by Mary Jo Bain, who you've probably never heard of, in the Tulsa Sunday World back in the 70s, about 30 years ago, and I'll tell you why I did that. I'll just read this quote. She says, quote, we really don't know how to raise children. If we want to talk about equality of opportunity for children, then the fact that children are raised in families means there's no equality. It's a dilemma. In order to raise children with equality, we must take them away from families and communally raise them, end quote. Now, why am I putting that in this book? It's not just that she said this in the Tulsa Sunday World 30 years ago. The reason I'm putting that in there is as soon as Bill Clinton becomes president, Hillary has this woman appointed as Assistant Secretary of HHS, Health and Human Services, for the federal government. Now, think of all the people they could have chosen, but they reached down and they picked this woman with this philosophy. Another buddy of Hillary's was Michael Lerner. Same period, back in the 70s, he wrote a book titled The New Socialist Revolution, where he goes on, and I put the quotes about education will be radically transformed in our socialist community. See, that's that word, socialist community, just like Calhoun used back in 1919, and he's talking about we will work collectively and so on. And then I put a letter from Mark Tucker in 1992 to Hillary when Bill Clinton's elected, and Tucker says, I've just been in David Rockefeller Jr.'s office, and we're celebrating because this will give us a chance to put our plan in from cradle to grave, the same for everyone. And so, you know, if Hillary runs in 2008 and gets elected, you can count on this happening again. And he closes his letter. Tucker's letter says, radical changes in attitudes, values, and beliefs are required to move forward.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest has been Dr. Dennis Cuddy. Dennis, thank you so very much for being with us. It's always a pleasure.
Thanks for having me.
God bless. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, fine. Well, that was Dr. Dennis Cuddy, his book, Road to Socialism, a simple, easy-to-read book, but gives you the information you need to understand we're moving towards a fascist society. But these people of great wealth have a different worldview. They want to control you. They want to destroy freedom, and of course they are subversives. They're working, of course, to destroy our Constitution, and many of them are working in government after having sworn to uphold the Constitution, and they really have lied. They're using their positions of power to enslave our people. They're going to take us into World War III. They're going to collapse our economy. They're going to impoverish the American people, destroy the middle class. It's all laid out. The Mein Kampf is in something called the Earth Charter. You can read it up on the Internet. That is the plan for the enslavement of the American people and the destruction of our country. If you'd like to get the book, Road to Socialism, it's available by calling 1-800-544-8927. We carry a book called The ABCs of Globalism, and if you'd like to know more about Alice Bailey, about the demonic spirit which energized Alice, certainly the book The ABCs of Globalism gives you a good overview of the occult forces, because there is a spiritual component to this whole idea of socialism and globalism. And then, of course, we carry the book Foundations, Their Power and Influence. Who is funding this whole communist movement in the United States? Russia? No, Russia, of course, is a failure. I mean, until recently, until we began building up Russia and putting in all their oil wells, to now they're the largest oil producer in the world, the largest natural gas producer in the world. But you can thank Shell Oil and certainly Exxon and Chevron Oil and the others that have been going over there to build up communism, but they always have, going back to 1919. And if you haven't read the book Best Enemies Money Could Buy, or seen the video by that title, or read the book Wall Street and the Bolshevik Revolution, all available from Radio Liberty. You need to get it. But probably one of the most informative books about who's been funding this whole communist movement and socialist movement in America is a book called Foundations, Their Power and Influence, which has been suppressed for 50 years. Well, almost 50 years. It was written in 1958. We borrowed money and put the book into print, and we've recommended to you Foundations, Their Power and Influence. Now, if you find it difficult to believe that people of great wealth are pushing this idea, you need to get the book written by Bill Clinton's mentor. It's called Tragedy and Hope of History of the World in Our Time by Professor Carol Quigley, who taught at Princeton and Harvard before he went to Georgetown University, and of course met William Jefferson Clinton, and he began to introduce him to the men who rule the world. And Professor Quigley believed that this was right. He was an elitist. He looked down on common people like you and me. But his book is fascinating. It's one of the most important books because he was secular. He didn't believe in God. He had all the facts. He should have been able to put this story together. He has a lot of it, but he missed the whole spiritual force that energizes these people who would enslave mankind and destroy our nation. So you can read his book, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time. It was so revealing that somebody came in back in about 1967 and purchased Macmillan that had published it and destroyed the place to the first half of the book and then refused to reprint it. And if you doubt that, we have an interview with Professor Quigley where he tells that. It's in our Secret Government 4-tape set. Or you can get that along with the Tragedy and Hope special. You need to find out if we're telling you the truth. And if we are, that I hope you'll join us in this epic crusade for the survival of Christian civilization and the souls of mankind. Our telephone number again, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. Go to our webpage at radioliberty.com. Read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. Again, the books we recommend, Road to Socialism by Dr. Dennis Cuddy, The ABCs of Globalism by Deborah Ray, the book Foundations, Their Power and the Influence. You get it by itself, or you can get it as part of the Tragedy and Hope special from Radio Liberty. And again, our number 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because America is under attack today. Happy New Year.